Welcome. We're back from our holiday break, and our first guest of 2021 is the talented and creative embroidery artist Ariane Zurcher. And this week's show is sponsored by Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery, and you can find them at avlia.life. And Krista West there at Avlia has some new, she's always cooking up new things, and she has a whole bunch of new things coming up. One is the Pomegranates Collection. Pomegranate Collection. She has six designs now. They're all PDF downloads. So six designs now, and she's adding to them. And they're only $5 each. So that's terrific. So six of them, $5 each. And then on top of that, if you stitch one of the designs and send your needlework, send the finished project to Krista West at Avlia, so that she can photograph it and so it can be released as a kit or pattern, then you'll get $50 credit toward your next purchase, and you'll get your embroidery back, which is really kind of Krista. So think about that. Then also during January, 25% off all download patterns with the code WINTERFUN. So 25% off all download. Now these are just downloads. Download patterns. The code is WINTERFUN, and that's in January at avlia.life. And then she also has some new BitKit coming up. BitKits coming up. There's Carnation, Cross, Scroll, and Star. And then Delphinian Cornflower is a new kit. So check all those things out at avlia.life. And then also sponsoring this week's show is the Embroiderers Guild of America. And as we all know, the EGA is a community of stitch-minded people who inspire passion for the needle arts through education and the celebration of its heritage. And I encourage you to join. It's a great organization. They are really doing wonderful things. And if you don't have a local group or don't have time or want to be part of a local group, be a member at large. That's what I did. It works out great for me. All that is at egausa.org. Now, there's a couple things coming up. I'm going to sign up for this one. Really excited about this one. On February 13 at 1 o'clock p.m. will be the next EGA virtual lecture. And that the topic there will be the art of the Japanese internment camps. And Tony Gerdes is going to present that lecture. And you can go to wetalkfiber.com and put in Tony Gerdes, T-O-N-I and G-E-R-D-E-S, and hear our interview with her from some time ago and learn more about Tony Gerdes. Tremendous talent, extremely knowledgeable a designer and artist, and you'll want to sign up for this virtual lecture. Now, registration opens January 11 at 1 o'clock, and it's limited, I think, to 100 people. So you'll want to act quickly. Obviously, you have to be an EGA member, so yet another reason to join EGA. But 1 o'clock, January 11, you can register for this next virtual lecture. And then also coming soon, and registration is underway now and ends February 3, Brian the Bee with Hazel Blomkamp. And actually, Hazel Blomkamp will be a guest coming up here in the next couple, 3 weeks, so you'll get to learn more about her. 100 students for that. Brian the Bee with Hazel Blomkamp, limited to 100 students, and registration going on now at egausa.org. That ends February 3, so act quickly. And then, of course, remember the lightning rounds, and those are a great opportunity for members at large and small EGA chapters to have a group course. It's an excellent option for a small group of friends also, and new lightning round registration begins on March 1. There will be four classes, A Touch of Fall, Ancestry, Desert Strands, and Shimmering Dreams. So be sure and check those out on the website. And then, of course, coming up September 1 will be the Magnificent Stitch, the EGA National Seminar, which will be downtown Chicago and hosted by the Great Lakes region. So thanks to Avlia, Mediterranean Folk Embroidery, and EGA for sponsoring this show. And now our conversation with Ariane Zurcher. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artists. And our guest this week, Ariane Zurcher. Ariane, welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Gary. Hi, Beth.
Good to have you.
It's good to be here.
Okay, you been listening. Beth got me connected to you. And boy, you've done a lot of videos this year. You went nuts.
I did.
I started following you like in February.
Okay, so the first video was February 20th. And okay. I'm in New York City. Just so you get the timeline here. February 20th, 2020 in Manhattan. The COVID broke out in Manhattan. We were the epicenter.
Right.
I had nowhere to go. And I thought, okay, here I am. I've started my YouTube video channel. I'm going for it. I was literally working from 5:30 in the morning till midnight. I was doing two videos every day, 7 days a week. My husband was saying, you are insane. And I could not disagree with him. There was no counter argument.
I remember thinking, she's doing a lot of videos.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. Beth said, you know, you need to listen to her videos. And okay, fine, I will. And I listened to one, and then there's notice of another, and lady, you can't keep this up.
And I didn't. And then I calmed down at around June.
Well, you hung in there a long time.
I did. Yeah. So, but I still do at least one or two, usually two a week, and often more than that.
Now, what got you doing that? I mean, obviously it was time, but you obviously had a ton of stuff to say, too.
Yeah, so I had this idea about 2 years ago. I was looking for, I was on YouTube and I was trying to figure out how to do a stitch, but I'm left-handed and I couldn't find anything. And it was how to do needle turn applique, actually. There wasn't any videos. There was one video, and the woman had just turned, she was right-handed, and she just turned her camera upside down and said, do this. And then another person said, yes. Oh,
no,
yes.
No, yeah. That doesn't work.
Yeah. So then, and I thought, okay. So then another person did a video on needle turn applique, and she was left-handed, but she didn't show how to start or finish or how to go around a curve or, I mean, you know, so I thought, okay, well, there's some room here. That's really where the whole thing started from.
Okay.
And then I, my friend Anna Bates, who has a very popular YouTube channel called Stitch Roadies and Quilt Roadies, she and I got to talking, and she really encouraged me to go for it. So that was how it all sort of started, the very beginning.
But now,
and I
go ahead.
And I looked at you because I do have friends that are left-handed, and if you're a right-handed person and you're trying to teach someone who's left-handed, I was like, here, look, ladies, look at these videos. We had just done a Sue Spargo at our guild, just a little pillow. And I said, go look at her videos. And so yeah. I sent them to you. I was like, oh, look, she's doing left-handed, ladies.
Yeah. And in the beginning, Sue and I talked about doing a YouTube channel together. And then her schedule got, you know, her schedule is very busy. And that for a whole variety of reasons didn't work out. And so I just launched on my own. But
now,
yeah.
Now, you talk about Sue quite a bit. Apparently you guys are good friends and collaborate quite a bit.
Sue, no.
For those who don't know, Sue Spargo, very creative lady. Well, she does a lot of crazy quilting and...
It's wool applique.
Wool applique.
Right. Yeah, she stitches on wool. She does a lot of layering. She has really lovely techniques and really pretty work. But it was important that I find my own voice, and so I've moved away from. Sue is I don't know if she would call it folk art, but I think she might say that. I hope yeah. I'm not. Yes, I don't want to step on any toes here and describe her in a way that she wouldn't want to be.
Well, I think she fits in that category. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So
very, very good folk art, but folk art.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So, there's beautiful folk art. Yeah. In any case, it was important that I find my own way, and I started experimenting with a lot of different. Techniques and things that I was learning along the way. And I started working with this hand-dyed linen, which is what I've been doing now, and moving away from representational and really moving more toward collage and abstract, kind of expressionist more, if you will, with stitching. And since I have a whole background in design, and, you know, that's been my career for the last 40 years in some form or another, it was fun to just start branching out and doing using thread and in a way that that was new to me anyway.
Yeah, that's this embroidery work that you're doing these days is a fairly recent thing, but for you, art and needle and thread have been your life or part of your life from the beginning. I mean, you've had,
right. So I started up in fashion. Yeah. And prior to that, I mean, I was taught to knit right-handed. I knit right-handed by my mother, when I was a little girl. And, then I went into fashion. I was a fashion designer. And then in fashion design, started designing knitwear and was the contributing editor at Elle magazine and had that, you know, how to knit page that they used to have in the back of the book. It was a page with a knit featuring a hand knit. And then you turn the page and it would show the instructions. And that was my page for a little while. And then I sort of went off and did a lot of other things. I was a creative director at an ad agency and lots of other stuff, but always doing something in the form of design and art. And then I began designing jewelry, and I kind of hit a point where I felt like I didn't know where else to go with the jewelry. And that's when I started doing the stitching, and I've been stitching for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And what I do now is what I'm calling improvisational stitching. I'm taking a blank piece of linen, hand dyed or not, and then I'm just starting to stitch on it and adding stuff. And now I'm playing around with different things, like I've got a whole bunch of wool roving that I'm going to start incorporating. Someone sent me a bunch of silk, what they call silk hankies, that are from this Trenway Silks, a company in Colorado. So I'm going to start incorporating things like that. And I've started doing things like taking a piece of wool and putting stuffing under it and then whip stitching it down and then putting stitches on top of that. So I'm creating these kinds of topographical, where it's there's a really three-dimensional quality to the work.
Yeah,
and I'm just kind of going wherever wherever I can. I just keep thinking, well, what else could I do? What about the here an old T-shirt? Let me paint that and cut that up and add it and. Here's some old cheesecloth. Let's paint that and scrunch it up and maybe I can ruche it. And so then I ruche it and well, maybe I could add a bead. Now I'm thinking, I've got all this, semi-precious, different gemstones. Well, maybe I should add some of those in here. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see where I go.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And how do you choose your threads when you're doing this
improvisational?
Thank you.
Well, I have a lot of thread, and I'm always looking for, you know, like I'm on a whole Steph Francis bender right now. I just bought a whole bunch of Steph Francis threads from the UK.
Who's Steph Francis? That was
Steph Francis is a company, a thread company based in the UK.
Okay.
Beautiful variegated. They do pearl cottons of all the number 3, number 5, and number 8 weight, but they also do these sort of raw silks, nubby threads that have different thread weights wound into the thread itself with amazing colors. The colors are really what call to me. If a thread has cool colors, I'm on it. You know, it's like, ooh, let me see what I can do with that.
Oh, yes.
The Thread Gatherer, she has some amazing threads that you can't find. You know, people carry her threads, but she has, you know, an oriental linen that's just luscious. I love it. And then, you know, as far as how to choose the threads, I just grab something. I mean, the hardest part, I think, about starting anything, whether it's a book or a painting or this, is that blankness and the choices. And what I found is the more I sort of worry about what that first step is going to be, the worse it gets. So I just grab anything and just start. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is, because I can pull it out, or I can cover it with something else, or I'll love it and keep going. So I just grab something, whatever's, but sometimes it's literally, Beth, it's what's on a needle, what's already threaded. And then it's which needle is it? If it's already threaded on a chenille, well, I won't do a wrap stitch then. I'll do something else. If it's already threaded on a Milner's, I'll do a wrap stitch. And that's literally how I'm making my mind up on some of this. It's, oh, I've got an oriental linen on a Milner's. Okay, let me do a boyonnot. You know what I mean? And then I go from there. Well, let me do 100 more boyonnots, all in a cluster on top of each other.
Yeah, and I like that approach. You don't always, yours is a little bit more is better sometimes on your work.
Then there's also lots of blank space too, you know, so that your eye can sort of travel and rest and not, sometimes if it's so much, it can be overwhelming visually.
Right.
But this is, I think it's interesting, my design background, when I was at Parsons School of Design, which is when I came to the city in 1981, there's a lot of basic stuff that you cover that is applicable to any of the mediums that you might use. It certainly applied in jewelry. It's applying now with this, with kind of working with fiber and threads. It's their general ideas that remain the same and they translate. So that's been great.
Okay, well, I gotta stop though. Some microphone is rubbing. It's really dominating the conversation.
Okay, I will hold my little cable here up, and so if it's me, hopefully that'll stop.
That seemed to have stopped it. It really was getting.
Okay.
And I, the first three emails I'm going to get are, make that stop.
Yeah. So. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. Okay.
Got
it. All right. So Beth, you had a question. Go with that.
So I was going to ask you your approach with design, but you also have a different approach with how you look at color than most needlework artists. You know, most talk about value and tone, but you discuss it in a different way. Could you touch on that?
Right. So we had to do a lot of when I was it's an art college, right? Parsons. We did a lot of color theory and all of that. And I think that that's all really helpful. But now, 40 years in, I think of color as having personality. So I wrote a blog post about this. I think of it as you're at a dinner party and you've got the know-it-all. You've got the person who's super bossy and kind of dominates the conversation. You've got the person who's shy, but actually if you just spend some time speaking to them, they actually have some really interesting things to say. You've got the person who's just super timid and also can be very interesting depending on who they're paired next to. And so I think of, you know, there are certain colors that are really bossy and they're always, no matter what you do with them, like fire engine red, wherever you put that, it's kind of screaming out, look at me. So that's great. And if I want a little fire engine red, awesome, but I'm not going to have a huge amount of fire engine red, except unless the whole thing is going to be variations on red, then that becomes a whole different thing. But typically, if I'm throwing red into the mix, I'm going to put it in a couple different places, and it's going to be, I'm going to put some boundaries around it, because otherwise it's just going to dominate and take over the conversation. So that's how I sort of look at things. I look at a piece I'm working on and I think, what is this piece saying? You know, and what's this color saying? And is it adding to the conversation? Is it taking the conversation in a whole new direction? Do I like that direction? So this last piece I've been working on, which as people who have been following my journey on this one know that it's been a bit challenging because it's a color I really don't care for, but it's kind of a flesh color background. And the reason I chose it was because I kind of did this, I decided to have this challenge for myself that I was just going to pull whatever was on the top of the pile of my hand-dyed linens.
And I thought that was a mistake.
I should have looked. So anyway, I set up this challenge for myself, and because I can be very stubborn and persistent, I thought, no, I'm going to keep this. And so I kept going with it. And the background color just really was tough. It was tough for me to find other colors that kind of seemed to have a nice conversation with it. It seemed a little bit too domineering. And it's hosting the party, you know? So all the guests are like, you know, getting sidelined. So I had to come up with some strategies that were going to kind of tone that down, but also create some interest. And then I did. And now I kind of am loving this piece. And there's a whole, at one point I was so exasperated that I just took out some, I used these Caran d'Ache pastels, and I just took some pastels and literally started just drawing all over the base fabric because I just had to do something, and I wanted to create more rounded shapes. There were a lot of striations within the dyed fabric itself that were linear and kind of going off a little asymmetrically, but very much they weren't rounded, and I knew I needed some roundness in there. So I created these sort of round parts. And then I cut out a big piece of cheesecloth that I think I had some raspberries that were going bad. And so I stuck the cheesecloth in the raspberries for a couple hours and then washed it out. And I don't know, I think there might have been red wine left over. So I dunked it in there. And anyway, it came out this very sort of faded, because I didn't apply any soda, you know, ash or anything to it to really keep the color. So it's this very kind of pale color, and I just added a big circle of that. And then so there's this whole thing now happening that kind of looks like a wave, which I sort of love. In any case, as I said, it's turned out to be a piece that I'm enjoying, and I'm not even sure that I'm going to do much more to it. I think I might be almost at this point done.
really
and I might just start with something else.
Oh, fun. I think what intrigued me about your choice on colors is I'm doing a sampler, and I put in a yellow and that yellow, I was like, what is wrong? What is wrong? And it's like the yellow is screaming. And that's all I could hear you saying. Sometimes the colors scream at you. And I'm thinking, that's the problem. That yellow is screaming at me. I think it's going to have to come out.
It's making yellow, too much noise. Yeah, I find yellow very tricky. Now, yellow is very tricky for me personally because it's a color that I don't have a strong bond with. Let's put it that way. I feel as though I don't want to insult it, you know, or hurt its feelings by saying anything negative. And yellow can be really beautiful, but it's a color that I have to use really sparingly. And it's one that I'm always careful of because it doesn't play well sometimes to my mind. And that's the thing about color. Everybody's got a different idea about color. So if someone says to you, oh, you could take a course in color theory and the psychology of color and come away with all these ideas about color. And maybe that's true for you, but there's going to be someone else that it's not true for. I mean, gradation, sure, but the psychology of color where green, which is supposed to be for most people a calming color. Well, if someone hates green, that is not going to be a calming color for them. You know, it just isn't. So it's subjective and there's no hard, fast rule on this. We're all different and what you are going to be attracted to may not be what I'm attracted to. I know a couple people with this piece that I was telling you about with this color that I found so problematic. They said they loved the background color. You know, so there it is. Okay.
All right. It's interesting that this comes up because Beth and I had a bit of a lengthy discussion here a few days ago about color. And yeah, because I would really like to have at least a decent command of color and how it works and how it doesn't work. And I'm just terrible at it. And every time I sit down to learn it, my eyes glaze over and I lose interest. And because I just can't get a hook on it. And right. that gives me some place to start. It's always, you know, complimentary and the color wheel. And yeah, I get all that. I mean, I can figure that out. That's not hard. But then making it actually function in place, in a piece of art or anywhere is where I really struggle. And then run into people like you who just see it. And it so frustrates me to just personally because I can't do that. I have to have some set of rules to go by.
Right.
I don't know, eventually if I were to follow them enough, I suppose I'd start varying from the rules, but then for you, just start somewhere and sort it out as we go is kind of foreign to me.
Right. But you know, Gary, I think that are some rules that anyone can follow. And the first I would suggest is figure out what colors you really love. You know, you were saying that I can see them. I feel them. That's what I would say. I feel the colors. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling. And getting in touch, and that's what I think some of this color theory, all of that, which is great and I think important, but if you're not talking to people about how it feels, then I think that's a big gap in how they can proceed. If you're working with a color that you really basically just find you don't like, that's going to make it really challenging. So the first thing to do is just to get a whole bunch of colors in front of you. And which ones are you gravitating towards? Mm-hmm. You know, which ones are you just don't think, just feel, you know, which one am I moving towards? Because we all have colors that we move towards just by instinct, there's no logic to it. They just appeal to us for who knows why they just do. And so start with a color like that. That'll make it easier.
So that's my hook then.
I would say.
Oh, okay.
I'd say, you know, and then report back. I want to hear.
Homework assignment, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to hear how it goes.
Go ahead.
It's interesting to me. I was pulling threads for a piece, And I realized, although I have a lot of like embroidery floss or whatever, I didn't have a lot of different weights in the color blue. And I like blue, but I have pinks and purples, yellow and green, because I know you need them like in different weights if you're doing flowers or something. But I had no blue. And I was just shocked that was a color I really didn't have. And I have an extensive stash of fibers, but that was a color I didn't have a whole lot of. And that was because I liked that color. And I was just surprised by that. And it was just.
You do like the color blue.
Oh, I do like it.
So why weren't you getting more blues, do you think?
I think it's because when I gravitate to a color, it's the pink, purple, red colorway.
You're thinking flowers.
I'm thinking flowers, and I don't think blue. And I was looking at a piece I'm working on, and it's like, I need blue in this piece. And I was like, I have nothing in a different weight. I have a number 5 pearl cotton and floss,
right.
and nothing else. And I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to have to go and do a little shopping.
There you go. It sounds like it.
That's interesting, Beth, because you do a lot of gardening.
Right.
And so I wonder how much that influences the colors you buy if you just go buy a bunch of threads, because not a tremendous amount of blue in a typical garden.
No.
Hits and misses. You almost have to select a flower to get the blue, where yellows, greens, oranges, those kinds of things are everywhere. So that's interesting that you would have those colors and not have blue or very much of it. It makes me think that, the mind behind the mind is doing its job.
Right. But you need the whole range sometimes,
right.
It's like, yeah. And that's why I don't like green. Green is not a favorite color. Yellow is not a favorite color, but I make sure I pick up a little of it because I know I will need it when I'm doing things. And that's why I was really surprised not to have blue.
Right. I'm not doing any representational stitching any right now. And, which doesn't mean I won't at some point. It just right now it's not calling to me. So all of those, which color kind of thing, it's like any color, any color is going to work. So let me just play with all different colors. And now I've been doing this thing where I'm thinking, okay, let me try to use one color that I really don't like yellow, and just put it somewhere, just a little bit of it. And so I am. I'm adding just a little touch of it somewhere, just to kind of push myself to use it, to not play favorites so much.
It's interesting. It's interesting, this approach that you have to what you're working on right now. Because if you look back at your life, art is the thread, but you have tried. All different kinds and expressions of art, jewelry, knitting, whatever it might be, all different kinds. And these days it's embroidery. And
right.
Yet, and then within your embroidery, you try all different kinds of things. But art is the thread that carries through. And as I was doing research on you, I began to wonder, is embroidery, is this... all a journey of I want to try art and I want to experience it in different ways, or is it a journey to a point and embroidery is the point where now you found a home? Because you're just one of those artists that expresses in different ways at different points in your life, and success each time. I mean, your jewelry is stunning. You owe me a half
Thank
an hour
you.
Of time studying your jewelry. Jewelry to embroidery is, from hard metals and stones to thread is quite a leap, but the art carries. And,
right.
Yeah.
The basic concepts. you know, those continue. And as far as where this goes, I have no idea. I had a thought that I wanted to work a little bit bigger, and so I might do a larger piece next time around, or who knows when, but that's kind of in my head. I've also been thinking about adding more more elements, so found objects, different things that I might add. And will that mean then that I need to start stitching on something that's heavier duty so it won't pull? It's really just kind of following the next thing, whatever that is, and being open to it. I don't have any preconceived notion, stitching, and then it's all going to stop here, and this is it. I think the home is art. Art is the home.
Uh-huh.
And so whatever way that gets expressed, that just becomes another tool in the toolbox, you know?
Okay, fair enough. No, that's
I just
wondering, because do you feel that psychological tug that, no, this is not it, I got to go try something else? But you don't. It's just
no, okay. Not at all. Yeah, no, I and it was when I was really in the thick of jewelry designing. I had a studio, and I was learning to be a bench jeweler so that I could make sample, I could play with the metal. I needed to get my hands dirty. I wasn't a designer that was just sketching and then sending it off to a bench jeweler and saying, here, make this. I was very interested in the mechanics of it. How do I get this metal to move and to change and to become this other shape and this other form? So I ran into this guy on the street in the Diamond District who was a master jeweler, and he said, come to my studio. And, you know, in the jewelry district, I mean, people are operating in little cubby holes that are basically the size of most people's closets. I mean, literally it's maybe 100 square feet, if that, and they're crammed in there with all their equipment. And there was barely room for me to have a chair. And I would sit there and spend hours watching him, and he'd say, okay, what do you want to learn next? And I'd say, okay, to show me how to, you know, I mean, people were incredibly generous and kind. And so that kind of evolved. And then I started playing with wax and shooting wax, hot molten wax, into water through a gun. I mean, it was sort of like crazy, whatever I could think of, you know. And then that led to this whole sort of insane unleashing of different collections. One I call the Juno collection. Another was called Dauphine, because it was very reminiscent of a kind of Art Nouveau. And I just kept following, you know. It really is more me following. Let me play, let me see what I can do, and then let me continue and just keep up. I'm just always trying to keep up. That's really what it's, you know. Idea about, you know, we were talking about colors, and I was saying red is so bossy, and suddenly I had this idea of, you know, I should do a whole piece that's just different colors, tones and hues of red. Just the whole piece. And just see what that's like. So, well, my mind is going, and I'm thinking, oh, and I've got this roving, and I'm going to start adding like this roving in there, and then stitch over it. And yeah.
Right. Don't you have some silk cocoons? Have you tried
stitching? Yes, I haven't. I've got someone sent them to me. She's so lovely. A follower on YouTube sent me this package of just the most luscious, gorgeous silk. Carol, thank you, Carol. She was so kind, and she said, do you know of this Trenway silk? And I said, no, I don't hankies, I had no idea. She sent me just layers and layers of this stuff. It's like gauzy and amazing. No, I've got to start. It's right here. I've got to incorporate it.
I know the silk cocoons, they can be dyed.
I bet they can. I was thinking I could use my Caran d'Ache and paint them.
Yes, and then they can be stitched on. I've seen people add, like, you know, cut them in half, kind of zigzag you know, make them kind of jaggedy edged. I don't know how, like little diamonds, and then put like beads on them and sequins and use them as sort of like a tassel look.
Wild. Love that. Yeah. So it just goes on and on what you can do and where you can go. I don't ever feel, and I guess that's what I love about abstract, is that I don't feel like as though I have something I have to do. There's no barrier. I can just do whatever I want, play with whatever I want,
yeah,
add whatever I want.
Yeah.
In a way that representational, it sort of adds an element of, well, does it really look like a, you know, I don't know, rattlesnake, you know, whatever.
Well, you had, I don't know what video it was. It was one I was watching last night where you had collected some lichens and other things and were marveling at that. And was it Amanda Cobbett that I did a show with who does so much work with that? I think that's right. And then you mentioned about coral and marine life and the colors and shapes and textures. And what really hit me was, because it appeals to me, is the getting in close to small things and exploring the colors and shapes and textures that are there, things that most people just overlook. And I really enjoyed that you were finding almost a new world in the up close. And at least that was what I took out of it. And then when you went into marine life and corals, then I, of course, you had me locked in because that's something near and dear to my heart. But there's that whole world of inspiration that most people walk by every day.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, here I live in New York City, right? I mean, there's 8.5 million people in the city. And I'm in a really, really busy city. And yet I don't feel drawn to stitch people or faces or even eyes. You know, I know someone who does these beautiful eyes that but that doesn't call to me at all. Not that it won't. Who knows? Maybe it will one day, but for now it doesn't. And the things that I love about living in New York is just the sheer diversity of pavement and a flower popping through a crack in the pavement. I'll never forget walking out of, this was 25, 30 years ago. I lived on 23rd Street in Chelsea. I walked out of my apartment. It was a four-story walk-up. I came down the stairs. I opened the front door, and I saw this beautiful flower that had popped up through the pavement. And I swear it hadn't been there the day before. I had not noticed it. And I was just astonished by this flower coming out of the concrete, the cement. And it was such a moment. And I remember just sort of standing there and staring at it. Had cell phones been around, I would have taken a photo. But, you know, it's that kind of thing. I love going and walking around the city and running into someone who's playing the other weekend, this amazingly beautiful young man playing the violin, and just sort of heart-wrenching. And I had goosebumps listening to him. And so afterwards we started talking, and he just a lovely human being. And I love that. I love that this city is just filled with opposites and difference and diversity. It's just everywhere you look. And so I like that idea, and I like the idea of carrying that into the work. And I don't know, I don't consciously think, okay, now I've got to, you know, do something different. But I am always thinking about shapes and color and, you know, texture. And so if I have a great expanse where I'm using a lot of stitches that are pretty close to the fabric and aren't rising up, let me get in some three-dimensional stitches in there. Let me get, if I have a lot of kind of shapes that are running vertically or straight, straight lines, let me get some round shapes. If I have a lot of smaller, let me get some really large. It, mixing it up, constantly trying to think about all of those things and incorporate them in a way that is pleasing to look at.
And you don't shy away from stitches. You know, a lot of people, oh, I couldn't do that stitch or I can't do that stitch. At least it's my impression that you need to express something. So you find a stitch and either know it or figure it out, but you make it happen.
Right. Right. So this last, over the weekend, I spent more than, I mean, the truth is I spent more than 16 hours analyzing and deconstructing the trellis stitch. Because no one was showing me how to do it in a way that I was consistently getting really excellent, perfect results. And I thought there's got to be another way. And so I redid it and I just kept doing it over and over. And at one point I was up at, I'm not sleeping so well these since this pandemic hit. I sort of get up at 2 a.m. kind of thing or 3 a.m. And I was up at 2. And I got so sick of staring at the ceiling and trying to fall back asleep. I thought, forget it. I'm just going to go stitching. And I stitched until 5 a.m, making this trellis stitch. And I figured it out. I mean, it was like I had conquered this stitch. You know, I was not going to let this stitch get the better of me. I was going to conquer it. I own this stitch.
I was going to say, you own it.
I have got this now. And so I did like a video for my patrons. It's over an hour.
You know? Like, it is.
I can't believe how many people have watched it. But, you know, and I'm thinking no one's going to want to watch this. They're all going to just like speed through it. That people have watched it, and you know, it's on my list of things to watch.
It's on my things to watch because we have to do that trellis stitch, Gary, in the queen sampler, and
there
it's hard to get that perfect. So,
and
yeah,
the decreasing, and that's the thing about, you know, like a book will show you, but is it going to show me how and where and why I'm decreasing when I am, or
right.
What happens when the thread runs out? And what if I don't want to have a thread that's 4 yards long? I mean, try stitching with something that's 4 yards. That's not fun, you know. But you're going to get a trellis where you never had to end the thread. So that's the good news. The bad news is you've really had to fight this thing. So I just think, no, I'm going to use a reasonable length, and I'm going to run out, and I'm going to figure out how to attach a thread. So I figured out, I have two different ways that I attach threads, and both you cannot see where that thread is being attached. So I show that in the video. And anyway, it was fun. I had a good time. Then I decided, oh, I should figure out how to do it in an oval. Ugh, why did I think this was a good idea? So now, and that's the thing. Once I get it in my head that I have to figure something out, I cannot let go of the idea. So I'm going to have to figure out how to do the oval with the decreasing. That's my big challenge.
I love the process stitching. No real goal in mind, just the experience of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun. I do really love doing that. And I enjoy what happens, the sort of magic that happens as a result. It's a lot of fun. It's very cool.
Yeah.
The other thing I think of is I'll think, okay, well, what stitch haven't I used? You know, because I have my go-to stitches, the Boyer knot, the French knot, the colonial knot. You know, those are kind of go-tos, the seed stitch. But then, well, what else can I do? Right. Or if I'm really stuck on the Boyer knot, okay, well, what else can I do with this? So make it into a tendril, 120 wraps. Let's try that, you know.
And those
let's
look
try,
so cool.
Yeah, let's try a cluster of about 50 Boyer knots that are each between 100 and 150 wraps. Let's do that. That sounds like fun. Or let me try to make a circle, you know, and tack it down. And yeah, it just goes on and on.
Well, that, and you're experimenting with the different threads too. You did a video where you said, okay, I'm going to make let's try all these different threads doing a certain stitch, and let's see if we can really make. Right. And I can't even remember the stitch. But you were wrapping, you were doing things that I was like, ooh, I don't know if that's going to work. And away you went.
Sometimes it doesn't, you know. Sometimes it doesn't. I mean, I did a video on GIMP, and I think I was trying the silk GIMP that has like a nubby thing to it, which is a really tough, challenging. And then I thought, oh, I'll do a bouillonnette. I mean, you know, really? No. That's not going to work out well. And then I decided to do a trellis stitch with it, which was really, I mean, at one point, I think I ended up, there was such a knot and people were, it was a live stream and people were saying, oh, I'm so glad you're showing us. I was tempted to buy this and now I'm not going to. It was like an anti-video, you know, like, and I was saying, no, it's really a great thread. You should try it. And they're like, yeah, I'm not touching that. And I'm, you know, and I'm struggling. I mean, it was like, you know, in a mud pit with a bull. I mean,
I'm afraid to try. I think that's the thing. I think that's sometimes as people, you know, people who have done embroidery for a long time, they're like, well, obviously you can't do this stitch with this thread. Well, really? You can't? Yeah. Why not try? Why not see what will happen?
Right.
What if I try?
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to always ask. Well, let me see. Let's see what happens. I do that a lot. Let's see what happens if I do this.
Well, and it's so important, too, because people who do videos such as yours and take on that teacher role, and you do a video, and, of course, you get it all right in the video. And so people kind of mentally will put you on a pedestal as someone who always does it right. And never makes a mistake. And it's, to me, it's so important to at least every now and then demonstrate that there's an awful lot of effort that goes behind being able to do it right every time. And there's a whole lot of mistakes and wasted thread and worn out ground cloth just trying to get to the point where you can do a video where you demonstrate exactly how to do it and can explain it. And people need to see that. To know that, you don't just jump in and get it right the first time.
Right. I did a video, it was a while ago. Someone had said something about using a chalk pencil and how their chalk was breaking. And so I did this whole like rant on YouTube about, you know, the thing about YouTube is it's curated, we're editing. I'm editing masses of stuff out that you aren't seeing. My chalk pencil's breaking constantly. You know, I don't have any magical, you know. Now, maybe there are people out there who do, and that's great, and I'd love to know how they're doing it. But I've tried all different ways, and my chalk pencil's always breaking, and it's just part of the deal. I even have, like, on Amazon, you can have, like, a subscription. I have a subscription for those chalk refills. I mean, like, it comes every 2 months. I get a new container because that's how often my chalk is breaking. So, you know, but it's like everything, you know, and there's, and what I love about the live stream is that what you see is what you get. I mean, there's no editing. I'm not editing anything. I'm doing a live stream and it's going right to the channel and that's it. It's being published. You don't have the opportunity to, you know, mess around with it.
Right.
Or if you do, I'm not. And people do, they love that. And why not? Because you get to see the mistakes. I mean, you know, I've gone on video and just ripped stuff out. I'm cutting it out. And people will say, my heart hurt when you started to pull out the scissors. You know? It's okay. It's going to be okay. Or, you know, let me just stitch over this. I hate this. I'm stitching right over it. Or paint. I mean, like, you know, with this last piece, I just got out the paint and started painting over stuff. The whole bits of stitches that I didn't, you know, didn't care for. Just painting right over it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's good to have a sense of humor about it and also not to take any of it too seriously. You know, I mean, this is all supposed to just be fun, right?
Right. Well, and that, you know, a lot of truth to that too. And that, I think that's where we, we go down wrong paths is taking it too seriously. And yeah, just do it. And I know what you mean about those videos. Yeah, more than once I've thought a live show, oh, I should go back and, you know, we got that little part there. We should cut that out. Nah, forget it. It's just life. Just run it, move on. And
It's, people can fast forward.
Right, you know? Right.
It's a great fast forward button. Yeah. You can shoot right past all that.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, I get that, you know, but that's the thing. I'm not doing the kind of fine embroidery work with a hoop that's very exacting, and it is very specific. That's a whole nother genre that I'm not touching. I mean, I don't claim any expertise over any of that, you know. That's a whole art form that I'm not interested in delving into. I really enjoy, but people love that. And when you do, then you should do it by all means. It's just not for me. That's all, you know, so I just do what works for me.
Yeah. Well, but even in that type of embroidery, there's still an awful lot of expression and ability to vary from the prescribed path. And right. and you start to see, as people get more and more experience, you start to see them do that. And you know, whatever artist is in them comes out. And you know, I didn't like this. This was okay, but I wanted to go over here and do this. And it's fun to watch when people do that. And they'll post a picture and say, yeah, this is what I did, but I changed this, and yeah, good move. It worked. Or I wouldn't have.
Right. But yeah. But I think, Ariane, where you help people who are more in the formal, would do more formal embroidery, is you help them start looking at their pieces and saying, okay, well, why don't I like this? What, you know, maybe you've always stitched straight from the pattern, and you'll say, well, there's something I don't like about this, and help them analyze it, like we were talking about the color theory. Maybe it's the color you don't like, and changing the color, you know, that's, yeah, it, for a lot of people, that's a huge leap in the needlework world. And, but you help them ask that question, you know, to start thinking about what they're stitching in a different way, saying, yeah, I love everything, but I really don't like this one color. Well, pull it out and try another one.
I think one of the big challenges with all of this for me has been finding my own voice, really finding my own way, and how I want to express myself with this medium, and how best I can do that, and what are the things that appeal to me. And it's very personal, and each person has their own journey. But I think a lot of people are afraid or worried that what they're doing might be wrong, or because we grow up with so many rules, you know. But this is one of those areas where you can throw all the rules out if you want. And so I hope if there's one thing I do, it's encouraging people to play and to find what they like, what appeals to them. Because it's going to be different from what appeals to me or you or anyone else, you know? And so the way we can each go about this in a very, very different way. And that's, I think, where, at least for me, where the joy comes. The joy comes in just playing and seeing what happens and just kind of following the joy. Mm-hmm. And so if I can encourage anyone to do that, I hope that's what I am able to offer, you know, and maybe a little bit of just some basic design stuff along the way. Okay, fine. But the big thing is just to encourage people to see how much fun they can have. And for some people, the fun is really just in following someone else's pattern, because that is fun. That is really can be very fun and very sort of meditative and lovely. And if that's really where they want to go and be and that's what works for them, that's great. Then just do that, you know.
Yeah, that's where you said that word wrong. And to me, that's where the artist perspective on the world and the non-artist perspective on the world, I think for many, that's the pivot point. Because from an artist perspective, there really isn't a wrong. It's just a different way. Yet to people who are not artists, if it's not some beautiful piece of art, then I did something wrong. Well, not necessarily. And maybe, you know, and there really isn't a wrong. You just did it a different way, and it may not be attractive, but you at least tried. Yeah.
Right. So what you're hitting on, Gary, I think is important, because this is the self-criticism, right? This is that critical voice that starts to do a critique, you know? So you have a blank piece of whatever fabric base that you're using, and before you've even taken a stitch, you're already letting that voice kind of raise the volume on you. Well, you know, I don't know. Is this really the right thing? Why did you pick this? Why did you pick this side? You should have done, you know, it's just constant. And it's always sort of, you know, well, you know, I think you should have done X, Y, and Z, and whatever you did, why are you picking that needle? You should have, and that's the thread you're going to commit to now, really? That's you know, and it's just relentless. I mean, you have to, and it's hard because I remember this in fashion and with whether it was fashion design or the hand knits or whatever. I mean, if an illustration I was doing, it's just brutal, and it can destroy any joy. It just can just destroy it all. So I think the really hard thing in it for a lot of people in the beginning is just to see that, hear the voice. Some people aren't even aware that it's going on, but inevitably it's in there. Even if it's a little sort of nasty whisper, it's in there, and maybe you're listening. And that's hard. It's hard to hear the voice and say, you know, I do this thing where I'll say, oh, okay. Well, thanks for your opinion. And I'm going to keep doing it this way. You know, thank you so much. And here we go. Yep. And you can come along, or nope, you can go away now. But, yep. The more you practice, you know, hearing it and being cognizant of it, and the more you are able to identify it, the softer and the more it starts to just go away. To the point where there are times when I have hours, days when that voice isn't even, it's gone. Because I'm just, you know, it has no place in this for me. Yeah. It's going to do nothing positive. But I think it's really, really hard. And I think, and I remember how crippling when I would listen to it, how crippling it could be.
And I'm having that problem right now with, I've got two that's more like a freeform embroidery pieces, and I'm stuck on both of them. And it's that voice. Oh, why are you doing that? Oh, you shouldn't have even started this piece. Look how ugly it is. And it's like, okay. I'm like, deep breath.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
And it is. It's just ongoing. It's an ongoing background noise. I think maybe acknowledging it and saying, okay, that's what your opinion is. But I'm going to keep working on this.
Yeah, it's very much like a bratty, you know, 5-year-old who needs to have you acknowledge them. You have to acknowledge the voice. You have to say, okay, I hear you. Valid. But we're going to do it this way. Because I think just like a bratty 5-year-old, if you ignore them, they just, what do? They up the volume.
It's
they're going away. They're not going anywhere. They're still there. And they are going to start shouting so loudly. And then they don't get your attention that way. Well, now they're lying on the ground. They are pounding their fists on the floor and kicking, you know, right. And screaming. You're not going to win. So you got to just, this is my experience. You've got to just say, okay, I hear you. This may even be a valid opinion, but I'm going to keep doing this. And then they kind of calm down. They're like, oh, okay, I got hurt at least. And then they start muttering, you know, there's like muttering. And you just say, okay, I hear the muttering, you know, I can still hear you.
I'm in the room.
I get that you have not left yet. It's okay.
All right. I hear you, but I'm going to keep going.
I'm going to keep going. And then you do. And then maybe you still hate it. And then you say, okay, let me take a walk. And now I'm going to come back and I'm going to tear it all out. I'll start over. That's valid too, you know.
Yep.
But I think one of the big things that happens for people, and I know this has happened for me, is that you start to compare yourself with someone who's been doing this for 35 years. And you've just picked up a needle and thread for the first time, and you're already comparing yourself to someone who's been doing it for 35 years. You know, it's those kinds of things that we do that are just so mean and not fair. We're not honoring the process. You know, we have to honor the process, like give it respect. It's, you know, I'm learning. I'm just learning. I'm figuring this out as I go here. It's okay. And the other thing I think that's a stumbling block for people is they put down, you know, they spend a couple hours and they've got whatever they've got on, you know, their piece of fabric. And then they look at it and they say, well, that doesn't look great. Well, no, you just spent 2 hours on it. I mean, you can't expect it to look like anything much. It's only been a couple hours. Keep going. You know,
going.
It's this impatience. It's this kind of, well, I don't know. I mean, that doesn't look great. And then the voice of, what were you thinking? Ends it, you know, and it's a no win. I mean, it's like telling someone who's, you know, painting, they've got a couple brush strokes and you say, well, what's that? Well, I don't know. I've just begun. I mean, you know,
give me more time.
Yeah. Like a few weeks maybe. So, I mean, this piece that I've been, you know, the challenge, I should probably call it the challenge. It's only been in the last week or so that I've started to say, oh, yeah, I like that. It's looking good.
And you've been working on it for quite a while.
I have. I have a Patreon page, and it's one of my patrons said, don't you have other works in progress? I have lots of works in progress. Clearly, she's tired of seeing this one piece. I totally get it. You know, and I thought, you know, she's probably right. I should start something else. Just cracked me up, though. Don't you have some more work that we can take?
I love watching the progress.
Yeah. I think it's important. You know, I think it's important to just start and then to be able to see where it started from, and you just keep going. And the people who, you know, end up with something that they really love, well, follow them from the start to the finish. You know, it's a lot more complicated and messy than the straight path we imagine.
Right.
Also, we live in a society where we are so wanting instant gratification. You know, we need to have Amazon shipping with drones immediately. You know, I want to be able to press the button of order and get it in an hour. And it's like, yeah, that's, and then that happens. And it's like, well, now I want it in 5 minutes. I mean, we are so in a society of now, you know, we want everything
right
now. I want this thing to be finished now. I don't want to wait through the process of it. And the process is meandering and it's not linear. Mine is never linear.
But that's something I think that the pandemic is teaching a lot of people. Given some time, you dial it back. It doesn't have to be instant. There's a lot of gratification in taking your sweet time to work on something. Yeah.
Well, hence the whole fad of yeast bread baking,
right, whatever it was.
That everyone was posting photos of these amazing loaves of bread. And I thought, oh, that's so great. I love it.
Yeah.
You got to put it in the oven, let it rise for a while. Or put it in a warm place, not the oven.
Let's end on bread, Ariane. Let's end on bread.
Okay.
That's a good spot.
Hot bread.
Thanks so much. That it was an absolute treat to talk with you. Thanks for making the time. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. So great to talk with both of you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening.